Good morning, members of the public and committee members. I call the State and Local Government Finance Policy Committee meeting to order on this Thursday, February 16th, 2023. Do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do have a quorum.
Awesome. A quorum is present. And Vice Chair Hewitt, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 14th?
So moved, Madam.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the minutes of February 14th? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposition? The motion prevails, and the minutes of February 14th, 2023 are approved. Vice Chair Hewitt.
Yes, Madam Chair. I do have a motion I would like to make today. I talked to the author of HF 1213, Representative Acom, and we do have to bring that bill back to the committee. I'd make that motion that we bring that back bill back in, please.
Okay, the motion before us is House File 1213. It's back before the committee. And the reason the bill is before the committee, Vice Chair Hewitt?
Basically, there was an error, is what I understand. So
you can say a chair error.
Well, I'm not going to say that. I still have bills to go before this committee.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm not a fool. Anyways, so basically, there was some error there, and we need to bring it back to correct those errors.
All right, so the motion before the body is to bring House File 1213 back before the committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? House File 1213 is now before the committee. And your motion, Representative, or Vice Chair Hewitt, is to?
Do I have another one?
I'm sorry. Send it. Where are we sending it, Vice Chair Hewitt?
Where are we sending it? Okay.
General Register.
We have to thank you, folks. I move that we send it to the General Register, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just for posterity's sake and for the public, could you remind the viewing audience what that bill does?
Yes. This bill is to repeal the compensation limit on local government officials. That's the political subdivision compensation limit repealed. That is the official title of the bill. So with that, I will renew Vice Chair Hewitt's motion to recommend House File 1213 to be placed on the General Register. All of those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
No.
One member opposed. All the motion prevails, and House File 1213 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Next, we have Chair Jamie Becker-Finn's bill, House File 626, before the committee. And I understand you have a few bills in your own committee that you need to be attentive to. We will move you out as quickly as possible, but no later than 9 a.m. Okay. So, Chair Becker-Finn, to your bill, since you're not a member of the committee, I'll move that House File 626 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Madam Chair, if we could also move the A1 amendment, that actually gets it in the shape that the House research brief describes.
All right. I move that the A1 be before the committee. Chair Becker-Finn, to your amendment.
Yep. So the A1 just makes it clear that there's a cap on how much the license can be. We had put the same amendment on last year. We just didn't catch it when we had this rejacketed this year. So just making clear that the goal here is to control some behaviors that are happening in some of our cities and not necessarily as a tool to get money from hotels.
All right. Fine. So the motion before us is to adopt the A1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Please speak to House File 626 as amended, please.
All right. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. It's a pretty straightforward bill. Members who've been on this committee in the past have heard me talk about this bill in the past. Essentially, it's just allowing cities to, if they choose, to enact a city code with a licensing system for hotels. And specifically, the reason this tool is needed and the reason that it's supported by the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association is that we have some problem properties in our city where the other tools currently at the city's disposal are not working to control some of those behaviors. And you'll hear directly from the folks from Roseville about what is happening in our hotels. But essentially, there are criminal activities and sort of things leading up to criminal activity that could be prevented if we had a better tool to kind of keep some of these property owners in line. And so that's the bill, and I think it's more important that you hear directly from the folks from Roseville. But I will say that this isn't just a Roseville problem. You know, I see other members nodding, and I know you've heard Burnsville, and I know in the past St. Cloud, Waite Park, other areas of the state have also wanted to use tools like this. So with that, I will hand it over to my testifiers.
And I'll just say the city of Plymouth appreciates this bill as well. So with that, we have three testifiers listed. We'll start with Ramsey County. Oh, please come forward. And if you would please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Sure. Erica Scheider. Good morning. I am the chief of the Roseville Police Department, and I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 626, which would allow licensing. I've been with the Roseville Police Department for 25 years and have been the chief for the last 2 years. I want to start off by saying the vast majority of our hotels in Roseville are safe and are well managed. Unfortunately, we do have a small number of hotels that we continue to have problems with, and it negatively impacts the overall safety of our community. Over the past 2 years, we've noticed an increase in criminal activity at a few of our hotels, including human trafficking, robberies, assaults, and other types of crimes. Over the past 5 years, almost 75% of police calls to Roseville hotels were generated from three specific hotels. And I just want to share just a couple of quick stories that really illustrate the magnitude and the seriousness of the problem. Last summer, the staff at one of our hotels refused to call 911 when somebody was having a medical emergency out in front of their hotels. They were slumped over a trash can and were foaming at the mouth, and that staff member refused to call for help. Thankfully, a good Samaritan jumped in, and we were able to get that person medical care. Turned out to be an overdose. In November, we had a live-in staff member at one of our problem hotels who admitted he solicited sexual services from a female and then smoked methamphetamine in his room. The female later reported being sexually assaulted. Recently, we had a long-term customer of one of the hotels claim that she was fined and also evicted after she tried to call 911 to report a domestic situation. And then also to note, our three problem hotels are responsible, the top three locations for overdoses in our city. Despite our efforts to address these issues by communicating with hotel management and applying our Roseville lodging nuisance ordinance, we continue to have serious concerns at these hotels, and we're not seeing significant improvements. Complaints are coming to us from nearby businesses that are looking to leave the city because of these hotels. We also are hearing from other hotels that it's negatively affecting their property because of the lack of upkeep at some of these hotels. City staff have used every tool available to us, and we're just not seeing the results. As a result, we support this legislation and appreciate you allowing us to come and share these stories today.
Thank you, Chief. We really greatly appreciate your testimony. Thank you for being with us today. Chair Becker-Fan, would you like to call up next the county attorney? Yep. Mr. Boy, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Choi, and I serve as the Ramsey County Attorney. And I'm here today to support House File 626. I want to first begin my remarks by thanking Representative Jamie Becker-Fenn for her leadership in bringing this issue forward and representing her community. This has been an issue that's been around for quite some time at the legislature here, where we've been asking for, cities have been asking for this type of scheme where they could address some of the issues that Chief Scheider just talked about. I can tell you that, you know, when it comes to being a responsible hotel owner, there's a lot of them in our state. And many of them are members of the Hospitality Association. And what responsible hotel ownership looks like is they work with their police, they work with their community to address the issues that are happening, these nuisance issues, this criminal activity that's happening in their community. So as an example, what good hotel ownership looks like is when the police talk to them about a problem that's happening, they take certain measures in place or they train their workers to see these situations and they'll help abate these problems that exist, right? But time and time again, I've heard from local police and local cities that just are very frustrated with there's a group of bad actors, right, who will do everything that they can to skirt these really reasonable requests of maybe additional security cameras or whatever it might be. All of those things can make a difference. And so in the context of trying to abate this type of nuisance and criminal activity, giving the power to the city to have this licensing scheme, I think, can actually make a difference. So I just strongly encourage all of you to give some additional tools to our local units of government. And I think that we'll continue to work with those responsible hotel owners. I'm very grateful to the hospitality industry because we have done a lot of work around human trafficking. And the reality is a lot of that activity is when people get trafficked, it happens in hotels. But the hotel industry really took the lead and started actually training their workers to see the people that clean the hotel rooms, the people at the front desk, to see this problem. And now in Ramsey County, we've trained all of the hotel staff. They've got posters in their break room about kind of what they should be looking for. But when we have that type of partnership, it can really, really make a difference. And this bill is really about those irresponsible hotel owners who are not being a part of the solution. And I really believe this tool can be of great assistance. So thank you very much for your consideration of this bill and your public service. Thank you.
Thank you, County Attorney Choi. I appreciate that. We do have, I understand, a couple of people who want to also testify. Joel Vogler, if you'll please come forward, and you will be followed by Jill Sims.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Joel Vogler. I'm a Senior Vice President of Operations for TPI Hospitality. We own and operate about 40 hotel restaurants and convention centers around Minnesota, including 5 hotels in Roseville. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you regarding House File 626 regarding hotel licensing. I come here with a shared goal with the City of Roseville. Over the past 3 years, there have been 3 hotels that have posed a significant challenge for the city, impacting the safety and good reputation of Roseville hotels. At TPI, we obviously have a lot of stake in the game here with 5 hotels in the city, and we want the same results as the City of Roseville does for the problematic hotels to be held accountable. At the moment, we have different paths to getting to the end result. Unfortunately, I'm not clear on why House File 626 is necessary for the City of Roseville or any other city to take enforcement actions against hotels for criminal activities, health violations, or public nuisances. I'd like to take the time to work with the city, county health officials, law enforcement, and appropriate stakeholders to ensure that the right enforcement mechanisms are being used at the city and county level before we pass statewide legislation that does not have clear guidelines to licensing standards or won't change enforcement. Today, I ask that you consider the unintended consequences and impacts this will have on hotels across Minnesota. We request more time for the hotel industry professionals like me to work with the author to ensure we are unlocking the right mechanisms and enforcement options to achieve our shared goal that Roseville and every other municipality has safe hotels with good reputations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks.
Jill Sims, if you'll please come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Jill Sims, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at Hospitality Minnesota. We proudly represent Minnesota's restaurants, lodging, campground, and resort sectors. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you on House File 626 regarding hotel licensing. We appreciate and share the goal to bring accountability to hotels that pose significant challenges to communities through criminal activity, health violations, and public nuisances. Unfortunately, this bill is broad as drafted and does not clearly delineate how this new potential license structure will provide any more clarity or enforcement against problematic hotel operators. To that end, we appreciate the opportunity to partner with local units of government, law enforcement, and other relevant stakeholders to mitigate circumstances that are not in compliance with state, federal, or local regulations. We've submitted a letter that outlines our questions, but in particular, we're seeking clarity on how does this bill create different enforcement mechanisms than the ones currently in place? If criminal activity is taking place at any business, local authorities need to bring charges, and this includes the city and county attorneys. No license or standard will change that. Additionally, Wake Park already has an ordinance like this. Let's examine their footsteps and understand how they got there. We appreciate Representative Becker's Finn willingness to work with us on the A1 amendment, which establishes the cap for the license fee. However, today we'd kindly ask the author and committee members for more time and the opportunity to work with the author, relevant hotel industry parties, and government stakeholders to better understand why the current enforcement mechanisms in place are not working and amend them so they do. The hotel industry has not been asked to help identify optimal direction to avoid the unintended consequences here. At this juncture, it's critical we address barriers that prevent our shared goal from being achieved in order to identify solutions that will work for all parties. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate your being with us today. Are there any other members of the audience who wish to testify today? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Becker-Finn, for bringing this forward. Actually, it's kind of ironic, but one of my last 911 calls in my profession was to your city. And I was overwhelmed because I was being called in for a mutual aid call at a hotel. And we pulled up on the scene, and we could not believe the amount of squads that were there for a very simple medical call. We got out, wanted to ask what was going on, and they said this is a standard call for this location, which is unfortunate because I was already in that city for a mutual aid call, which meant their resources were drained already. And their resources continue to be drained by having all these squads come to this location because of history. So I really respect that we're having this discussion. I respect that the city of Roseville is bringing this forward. I want to thank County Attorney Choi for his efforts and what this has done for the state also in bringing this forward and what pretty much resolves in some of these. And Chair Becker-Finn, I think what's really important here is that this is an option. It's not, we're not putting a mandate out there. We're just saying the cities can do it. So thanks for doing that, and that gives local control.
Would you like to comment, Chair Becker-Finn, or go to the next question?
So one thing, thank you, Chair Cleavorn. So one thing, and I appreciate your comments, Representative Hewitt, and I think, again, it's a tool that if a city needs it, they can implement it. One thing I do want to just point out for the record is that I first introduced this bill on February 27th, 2019. So it has been over almost four years that we have been discussing this bill. So I think that's really important for folks to keep in mind based on some of the testimony we are hearing here. If our city and our police department had other tools that would work, we would have done them by now. And so I think just grounding us in that this is now, there's no reason for more time. We've had 4 years to discuss this. We haven't significantly changed the language throughout that time. And so now's the time to get this done. Let's give our cities the tools they need to keep everybody safe.
We have three more members who wish to ask questions. So we'll go quickly so that we meet your 9 o'clock deadline. Representative Nash, do you wanna go last or do you wanna go next?
I can go quickly.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Becker-Finn, I've been supportive of your bill in the past, as you know. But what I didn't hear today and maybe would help clear up some confusion is what sort of activities or what sort of tools does this put into the hands of the city in order to stop some of the things that were going on? We've had that conversation in committee before. And if we could just maybe do that, since I've got some new members that haven't heard the bill before, if you would, because I think that it's important, particularly as we're trying to address sex trafficking and some of the other things that you and I have spoken about. But what tools go into the toolkit of the city as a result of being able to potentially license?
Great question. Thank you. Chair Becker Finn.
Yeah, so thank you for asking me to clarify that. So one thing that what the bill does, and I think this is also important, is that it doesn't allow a city to add additional things above what the law already is. It essentially, you would need a license to operate. And so what happens if someone is in violation of any law, any of the state laws, and including local laws, then the city can pull that license. That's the tool, and then they have to stop operating. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is that prosecution only happens when you have a reasonable sense that you'd be able to prove something beyond a reasonable doubt. What this allows us to do, if there are other local, county, state laws that look like they're being violated, the city along with the police department could then threaten to pull that license, and then that's the tool that pushes the owner, the derelict owner, to do what they're supposed to do. So thank you for the question.
And Madam Chair, that's exactly what I was trying to get to, is $150 is not a big deal, and I'm one of the cheapest members of the legislature, and I'm not usually
remember you said that I did.
You can write that down, but I'm not one to usually rush towards enabling a fee for a license, but this does enable a city to pull a license and shut something down that is clearly they don't care about sex trafficking activities or other activities. So and for anybody who runs a legitimate hotel operation, $150 is nothing. But it provides for tools to go into the hands to prevent sex trafficking. And, you know, as all of us are parents and we live in fear of what could be, that's something that we would like to be able to shut down in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Lead Nash. Next, we have Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative. I guess I wasn't aware that cities didn't have the ability to license these establishments. I mean, I know that Minneapolis licenses, you know, hotels and lodging facilities. Can you give me, I have a question on line 1.16 in a second, but can you just give me a history, because I've never seen this before, of which cities may have licensing capabilities, which cities don't, and why this is necessary for, in this case?
Thank you. Chair Becker Finn.
Yeah, and maybe House Research knows the answer. I haven't researched every single city that has an exception. There is a way to license through the Minnesota Department of Health, so that's already, but that's about health code violations, so there's already that kind of licensing that already happens. Yeah, I don't know if I know off the top of my head. Yeah, we're shaking heads. I'm sure we could find that out. I know Waite Park had, years ago, had sought an exception to be able to do this. They were granted that, so they're specifically named in state law as having an exception to this. And then to your other thing, we actually took out 1.16 and 1.18 with the amendment. That was sort of it caused more confusion than was necessary, and so that part has been taken out of the bill.
Thank you very much. Ms. Griffin, did you want to add anything? No. All right, thank you so much. Next,
Madam Chair, just follow up. I'm still unclear as to why Minneapolis has the ability to license and other cities don't.
Okay, we're not really debating Minneapolis, but
I mean, I did see Mayor Fry in the room earlier, but I doubt that he knows that off the top of his head either. There we go. So for the record, since it didn't get picked up by the mic, the mayor of Minneapolis behind me just stated that they have a health licensing division within the city of Minneapolis, so they're able to do that. So there we go.
Thank you. That makes it clear to me now. Thank you, Mayor.
We all learned something new today. Representative Berg.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Becker Finn, for bringing this forward. My city is one of the cities that is mentioned in this, and that we do have a problem with it. But also in my other life, I stay in hotels for a living. As a flight attendant for the last 20 years, I have been in some very questionable places and seen a lot of things. Also, much like Greater Minnesota members, a lot of our pilots that live somewhere else or are based here stay in our local hotels several times a month for their careers in order to commute, and they are telling me things that they're seeing in our communities that I would never know about because I live here. And it is a very pervasive problem, not just with sex trafficking, but labor trafficking, when we've got folks that are being basically enslaved in labor that are you know, piled on top of each other in these hotels. But also one thing that I don't know that we always think about is with the housing crisis, we have families that are living in hotels with young children, living in the motels, some of the cheaper ones right off the freeways, all the things that Representative Nash is saying that we're afraid might happen to our kids, despite our best efforts. Families are being put in that position these days where that is the place where they take shelter. And so when we are exposing our youngest, most vulnerable members to the things that might happen, that the police chief has mentioned and Representative Hewitt, that's also another concern that I think we have the opportunity to address with this. So thank you so much, Chair Beckerfin. I hope we're all supportive of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Joy, I see.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Finn. This to me, as a business owner and selling tobacco, we have the cities have local control for tobacco license, and when we fail a sting, we get so many chances and you lose your license. I mean, and so this bill is a good bill. I think this is great, and I appreciate you bringing this forward. So,
thank you. Would you like to say a few closing comments, and then we'll
call? No, just appreciate the discussion and the clarifying questions from Representative Nash. I think it is important to get that on the record every year. Hopefully this is the last time we have to do this and we can finally get this bill passed. So thank you for your support this morning.
Thank you. And seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion to recommend House File 626 as amended to be placed on the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion prevails. The ayes have it. And House File 626, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Okay, we have House File 288 before us next. Chair Nelson, if you'll come forward. Representative Nash, would you like to move this bill?
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 288 come before the committee with a referral to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. The bill is now before us, House File 288. Representative Nelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And it feels kind of deja vu being back in state government finances the last 4 years I did this, but we were in the basement. Well, you guys got to move up to the ground floor instead of having to be in the basement. But anyway, that aside, why am I bringing this bill forward? And what is this bill about? It's about using the stadium reserve, which is the resources we set up to pay off the bonds. That fund is at a point where there's enough money there that we can just about pay the bonds off, which saves us money. This bill is also about saving us as legislators from ourselves. I say that because too often when these legislatures see a pot of money growing, and this happened 2 years ago, when it was reported that the stadium reserve was so large, that we get this idea of thinking all the things we want to spend that money on and not letting it be used for what it was intended for. So this is what this does, that also. Based on the November forecast, if we take the money from the stadium reserve, along with $9 million that the governor's proposing from the general fund, we will be able to pay off the bonds that were used to finance the stadium 23, and it'll be 23 years early. This would save the state and our taxpayers $226 million over those 23 years in interest, which is a good thing. What the governor's proposing to do, and well, the governor can do this right now. It was actually in the original bill, but he has the power to pay these bonds off without the legislature being involved in it. Other than the $9 million he needs this year from the general fund, he can do this on his own. If we were to wait till next year, he could do it without getting $9 million out of the general fund, because they're projecting there's going to be enough in that fund to pay off the bonds. But that would cost the state an additional $30 million in interest for 1 year. So doing it now is going to save us money. When this is paid off, these will free that revenue up, will go into the general fund to do other things that we want to do, from cutting taxes to funding housing, a whole myriad of things that we can do with that money, but because there's no longer an obligation on those funds to pay off the stadium. Now, there are other issues that we're working, that we're continuing to work on, and I believe the mayor is here to talk about this bill. There's obligations there. The city of Minneapolis, when the stadium was first built, the revenue that they were going to fund, that they were going to use for do that was committed to another source. So for the first 4 years, the state fronted them their portion of the payments off the $150 million that was their obligation for the stadium. We fronted them that, and now last year they started paying that money back. So this is, we need to deal with those issues, and that's what we're doing. I mean, no, it's not in the original bill. We're going to have to come up with an amendment, but we've been working on that. Senator French and I have been working on this. Again, that's why we're laying the bill over. You could ask what my interest in doing this, because I don't live in Minneapolis, but I'm a state citizen. I was part of the original group when the stadium was being built, negotiating with the state, negotiating with the cities, with the city of Minneapolis, negotiating with the Vikings to try and get the current stadium built. Part of that was setting up a capital improvement fund, and I think we need to make sure we keep that going as we move forward on this, because we want to make sure the stadium stays first class and stays up to date. Unlike what happened with the Metrodome, that we let it fall into disrepair and the roof collapsed. We all know that happened. But those things that happened is because we didn't spend the money as a state or as the city to put more money in to make sure that that was maintained and kept up to date. I'm a construction worker. I'm a carpenter by trade, retired, but I'm building buildings. Those things create a lot of jobs. But I don't want to see us building another stadium in my lifetime. And I hope to live a long time, not at least another 30 years. So I don't want to have to build another stadium. One final note, and this has been thrown at me by a lot of people. This is a bill for the Vikings. It's not a Vikings bill. There really is no benefit to the Vikings of us paying this off. The only thing is the Vikings is in their contract, and it's in statute, is that we're supposed to maintain it as a first-class facility. But if the bonds are paid off, they're interested in keeping the first-class facility. That's their big issue. But also, if the bonds are paid off, there was a tax that was put on the suites to make as a backup tax. No money has been collected on that tax, so it's just sitting there in the books. But they would like that removed, that off the suites, and that's the only benefit they're asking for out of this. And with that, members, there was a couple of handouts that were given to you from the MMB, and I asked for these. One is goes through all the things, and the other one here is a chart that I asked him what is every year, what's got to be paid, and you go through that. This is what would pay it off. If we don't pay it off, this is the payment schedule that would have to go for the city and for the Vikings. And with that, members, I'll open for questions or other testifiers. I don't have any myself.
Right. I do believe that the city of Minneapolis is here to testify on the bill. Are you comfortable with me bringing them forward at this time? Mayor Fry, if you'd come forward, please. Thank you. If you would state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jacob Fry. I am the mayor of Minneapolis, a resident of Minneapolis, a citizen of this state as well, and I'm here to testify on HF 288. Which is the bill associated with paying off the bonds for U.S. Bank Stadium. U.S. Bank Stadium is an asset to both the city and the state of Minnesota. It's one that's generated quite a bit of economic development in our region. It's an asset that draws people from all over the country and all over the world to our great state. And obviously, we want to make sure that this particular stadium is kept up well. I, like you, Representative Nelson, want to make sure that we do not need to build another stadium in your lifetime. We full-heartedly support the effort right now to pay off these bonds. It's the smart move financially. There's no question about that. We also believe that if the bonds are paid off, the obligations that the city has should also be paid off.
Simply put, it does not make sense for us to be paying debt on debt that no longer exists. There are about five main sections of payments that are presently being made that could be tackled as part of this upcoming legislation. The first is the debt service, which I mentioned. Again, if the debt is paid off, we should no longer be paying on that debt. The second and third purposes are for the MSFA, the Sports Facilities Association, to provide both capital improvement as well as operations. We want to align those with the expectations that our city generally has, and so we think that there's room for changing up how the formula itself functions. We have a number of other significant state assets within our city, including the Minneapolis Convention Center as well as Target Center. We're better able to anticipate what the expenses around operation and capital are for those facilities. For instance, on the Convention Center, we know that there's around $10 million on an annual basis that we will likely have to put in if revenues do not amount to what we are hoping for. Similarly, on Target Center, there's about $1.8 million in operations and about $5 million in capital expenses just to make sure that that facility itself is kept up to par and we can continue to attract great talent from around the country to perform. The fourth is the governor's recommendation, which that's the proposal is to actually eliminate purpose four, which is the advance that the state paid for the city's contribution. And then the final piece is the city would propose eliminating Purpose 5, which is a bit ambiguous and we believe can be tackled as part of the operations and maintenance for the facility itself. I'll also just note that there's been a lot that's changed over the last several years. There was a significant economic downturn, COVID-19 pandemic that pretty much entirely shut down those facilities. For an extended period of time. That is not money that we're going to get back. Certainly, we want things to rebound as quickly as possible, but that money that we lost for those years is not coming back. We fully believe that the state is making the right call in paying off these bonds ahead of time. It's the financially smart decision, and our position is that we should be a part of that along with the state of Minnesota. Thank you so much. I appreciate all of the work that representatives are doing on this legislation. It's critically important, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Ms. Chair Nelson, if you will indulge me in just allowing me to ask the city a few questions, I think if we can get some general information on the table, I think then it can maybe limit scattered questions from the committee. Is that all right with you?
That's okay. And Madam Chair, if anyone's interested in seeing what the original bill was passed, they go back to the, it's online, they go back to the 2011-2012 session when this was passed. It's House File 2958, and it lays out everything that was in the bill originally, that the costs and the sharing and where it goes. And as part of that, there's also, it's got to be mentioned, that the Vikings are paying rent. The Vikings are paying in the operation, and the Vikings are also paying into the operational reserve fund, the capital improvement fund, to maintain the stadium. So they're paying into that also.
Yeah, and you know, just so the committee knows, I have asked specifically that we keep this focused because we're state and local government. Basically today, this conversation, because we'll have opportunity to discuss this later again, on what it means to the state and what it means to the local government. And so one of the questions I'd like to ask of you, Mayor Fry, is what would the city of Minneapolis do with the savings if this obligation were to be eliminated for the city?
The savings would help us to budget for the future. I could give you a couple of hot items that I'm sure people would love to fund. That being said, the biggest piece is it allows us to be a fiscally responsible partner in municipality and plan. The obligations remain at about $307 million over 24 years. If you break that up on an annual basis, it's $12.8 million. but even that we can't anticipate in full because there are fluctuations as to capital and operations needs. That's why it's so important not just to tackle the outstanding debt payments, but also the formulas that were set in place a number of years ago. Nobody could have anticipated what has happened in the last few years, but certainly we can adjust.
And then, so you went through a quite extensive list of provisions that you would like for the committee to think about, whether it's, you know, not paying on the obligation that no longer, the debt that no longer exists, the MSFA, the advance that the state paid, and then eliminating Purpose 5. You mentioned all of those. Is there anything further that you would want us to consider in this elimination?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the first piece is the debt service. Of course, yes, we would like that eliminated, assuming the debt itself is eliminated. The items 2 and 3, we're not asking for elimination of those. We're asking for simplification of the formula. And then items 4 and 5, yes, we're asking for elimination of those. There are not items beyond that, at least that I'm aware of at this point.
Okay. And then, let's see. And then I think you kind of said this in your opening, but why should the state pay for these facilities?
As at this point, the revenues that we have anticipated have drastically exceeded the expectations. It is a statewide asset, and given that those revenues have exceeded and that we're planning as part of this bill to pay off the debt, it doesn't make sense to pay debt and make payments to it when that debt no longer exists. It's financially smart. It's just a good fiscal smart governance.
Okay, and the revenues you're referring to are the stadium fund. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. With that, we will move to member questions. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As one of the authors on this bill, Representative Dowd is here as well with Chair Nelson. Chair Nelson,
you can have that.
Chair Nelson, you and I had discussed this bill on the floor the other day, but you didn't mention one part. You had mentioned a significant savings that the city of Minneapolis will be able to take advantage of by avoiding certain things moving forward. If you would, for my members that are new here, by paying this off, they'll be avoiding a certain amount of interest and other payments. If you could go through that again just real quick for us. I think that's a handy thing for our members to hear.
And my notes here in these may not be totally accurate, but the flip chart that you were given, lays a lot of this stuff out from MMB. But when it was financed, the state financed $498 million for the bonds. $398 million of that was the state share. $150 million was the city share. And that was part of the negotiations in the original bill. Because at the time the city was still paying off the convention center, and those revenues that were, they would be targeted for the stadium, the state fronted them that money. Currently there, as the mayor mentioned, $303 million. Currently, the current value of that $150 million with interest, just like a mortgage, was $333 million. Last year they started paying that back. So they paid back $27 million so far. So it's about $304 million of the construction cost. So that's one cost that's there. The other one that the governor has proposed to forgive is there's $1.5 million in the capital improvement fund that the city pays in, the Vikings pay in. Again, the state fronted them that $150 million from 2016 to 2020. Again, they started paying back on that in 21, and that the value of that right now is about $40 million. The governor has proposed to eliminate that. And again, this is what I'm getting from MMB.
Chair Nelson, are you referencing this?
That would be that, yes.
Okay, if I could ask members to look at page 3 of the MMB packet, the stadium reserve packet, I think it'll be easier for you to follow along with the conversation. Yeah. Thank you. Please proceed, Chair Nelson.
And then, like I said, the ongoing costs are the $6 million that is the city's obligation in the bill in the current statute for the operating costs. The Vikings are paying $8.5 million into that. That's, again, to keep it operating. Again, that's what we're looking at. The city would save on that money. They forgive that. They would. That's $6 million, or excuse me, that's the $1.5 million a year that would be that wouldn't be paid into. So I mean, there's money to be saved here, and there's money, there's ways that we can work this out with the city and through the process, that so that they benefit from us paying this off early. You know, the $303 million. That's if they start paying the amount going forward. Yeah, and that would be on the chart, this chart here that I gave my copy to the mayor. But this chart here is what they laid out, the MMB laid out. If they're paying 12.8 a year for going forward to 2046, that's the $333 million they're talking about. But if it's paid off, as the mayor said, I think we need to look at that as a mortgage. You pay off your mortgage early. You don't pay all that extra interest because it's gone. You're just paying on the principal and the interest from the past. So those are things that we need to negotiate and work on, and that's what we're working on, which is why we laid it over.
Thank you. May I ask Mayor Fry if he wants to add any additional comments to that? Or? All right.
I don't at this time, no.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, just to reframe that, not only does the state save, but the city of Minneapolis will save tremendous amounts of money. And I just didn't hear that in some of the testimony that we have gotten. So I just wanted to make sure that we put that on the record, that both sides save. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Do either of you have any closing comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Bonner, I didn't see your name.
Thank you. You know, I think you know Chair Nelson publicly. I have been very supportive of this approach. You know, I tend to be a little bit more on the fiscally conservative side in many respects. I'm one of those crazy folks who have actually paid off all of my debt at this point in time. And we talked a little bit in this conversation about how revenues have exceeded expectations, and we're in a unique position to be able to pay this debt off early, which doesn't happen very often. But it's a really good problem to have. So I'm very supportive of this. And in particular, you know, you spoke about the savings on interest over the course of the loan, that $226 million that we stand to save the taxpayers. I think that's a smart thing to do. Even next year alone, with $30 million that we save in interest versus the $9 million that we will spend on the general fund, that's a net of $21 million. Now, $21 million in the grand scheme of things may not seem like a lot, but $226 over the course of the loan is nothing to sneeze at, so really appreciate that. As you know, I personally feel that since we were able to pay this off early and those revenue streams were very valuable, that I have some thoughts about how we could address that, but that's another issue for another day. So I just wanted to say for the record that I really appreciate this bill. I really appreciate the fact that we are being extremely responsible about how we spend taxpayer dollars. And to your point earlier, that we make sure that we keep our legislators in check and that we use things for the intended purpose, and that we, at the end of the day, make the taxpayers the real winners here. Thank you.
Chair Nelson, I see that the finance team of Minneapolis has handed Mayor Fry a note.
Yeah.
Would you like to share something further with us?
Yes, I do have a fairly obvious point, but one that I think bears perhaps repeating.
Yeah.
It is correct that the bill would result in savings to the state. However, it would not result in savings to the city unless these changes are made. We would not share in those savings.
Exactly. And Chair Nelson.
And Madam Chair and members, and as I said in my opening remarks, next year, if the governor were to let it not do it this year and go next year to paying it off, it's going to cost us $30 million more as a state in interest. But at that point, he could do it, and we wouldn't affect anything that happens with Minneapolis. It's my intention to make sure that we deal with those parts of law that are the ongoing obligation for the city of Minneapolis, because they also should share. We pay the loan off. We pay their part of the loan off. They should also share in some of those savings and moving forward.
Thank you. So we will, no further questions? Oh, sorry. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I need some help understanding this. So the bill, you're wanting to pay off the stadium debt, correct? Am I understanding that correct?
That's, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Yeah. Chair Nelson.
Hey. Another question.
Representative Harder.
I need help understanding. So are you, where does this come in? Minneapolis is not paying their full obligation to what they, I need help understanding that because I got an issue with that.
Yeah. Okay, where, Chair Nelson.
Madam Chair, members, as part of the original bill, and I say if you go back and look at it, it's very complex finance. That's, some of it's above my head also, but the state fronted the city money, or the Viking, or the city share, the state fronted the city share at the beginning, and they're paying that back. They started paying that back last year. And so that's, there's as part of this bill, like I said, it was to get it built, and the operating costs, we fronted that, they're paying those back. Again, the governor's proposing that because the debt's going to be eliminated, so the debt, the portion of debt that the is theirs. Just, again, that's not in the bill, but that's something we need to work out.
May I just, if you don't mind.
Representative Claver.
Thank you. Representative Harder, I think the piece, and I have been working for months trying to get my head around this issue as well, so I appreciate some confusion. I think the piece that we're trying to work out here is that, one, the stadium reserve account was more successful than anybody anticipated. The second piece about this is now that the funds are there to pay off the construction, should Minneapolis continue to pay interest on a debt that no longer exists? That's part of the conversation. And we will, there are ongoing conversations to be had. And Chair Nelson, as I understand it, possibly you'll be bringing forward an amendment later to this bill that we can discuss in an agreement that all of the parties can get their head around. And then we'll have more further conversation about that. And so to that, I'm going to ask you if you have closing remarks for this bill before we lay it over.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I heard earlier Representative Nash say he's one of the most conservative, thrifty people in the legislature. I would agree with that, and I would agree that I am, like Representative Bonner, I too am very tight with my money. I've joked at times that I'm a cheap Swede, and as we go forward, this makes sense to me. This makes sense to, I think, for the state. I paid my mortgage off early because I saved, I had the money to do it, and I was able, that relieved me of that obligation of that ongoing payment. Now I just got to pay my taxes. But that's, like I said, that's what this is about, is making sure that there's the money here in this fund that was set up to pay off the stadium loans. There's enough money to pay them off, pay the principal off, saving the state that's $226 million. And I think that's just a smart thing for the state to be doing.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. And with that, House File 288 is to laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you both for your testimony today. Next, we will have House File 734, Representative Hansen. Oh, I'm like looking for you in the audience, Representative Hansen.
It was just over in the corner there. Ready? I would move House File 734 be sent to the General Register.
All right, and with that, would you please present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 734 was in front of this committee, I believe, 2 years ago and also last year, and it relates to native landscapes and cities. And we've had a debate on the House floor already about, you know, the high demand for lawns to legumes programs, but there are Minnesotans all around the state who want to have something different than a traditional bluegrass lawn, but sometimes they are unable to do that. There have actually been some court cases already on this, and so what this bill does is it allows the owner, I think it's really a private property rights bill, lawn freedom, if you would have it, so that people can put in a pollinator garden. I think what it does to just address the concerns of folks of is this an unmanaged or just a weedy mess? The answer is no. You have in the bill definitions of managed landscape, meadow vegetation, ornamental plants. A lot of these definitions do not exist in current law, so this would be putting them into law. that cities would have that opportunity. You're going to hear support for the bill. You're going to hear some opposition for the bill, as in the past. I want to just say why. Why are we doing this? Because little bits of landscaping, little bits of habitat can provide a great impact in our biodiversity. We're in a biodiversity crisis in this world where we're losing the multiplicity, the volume of life. A best example is the rusty patch bumblebee. It's now really only found in metropolitan areas because of the threats to it that occur elsewhere. And so having little tracts of land provide that habitat for life, for that circle of life of which we are part of. And so having those little pieces, if a landowner wants to put in native habitat, they have a responsibility to manage it, but it provides that habitat for the little critters that help us as big critters. You will find in your packet there's written testimony from Conservation Minnesota, from Margaret Munson, the Metropolitan Cities. Again, some for and against. But I'm asking you for your support for this bill, as we've had in the past, to try to provide that opportunity for landowners in the city to provide native habitat in their yard.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Is there anyone who wishes to testify for the bill? Okay, we have two individuals. If you would please come forward and state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Cowan, and I'm a contract lobbyist for the Pesticide Action Network. The Pesticide Action Network basically tries to keep our environment, our pollinators, and people safe from the use of pesticides. And I'm also speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator and Wildlife Cluster, a group of organizations that work on these same issues. When you see me speaking, my primary concern and what motivates my being here is that we have clean water and healthy soil, and when we have that, we have pollinators, and when we have that, we have a good environment. Just a couple of points why we're supporting this bill. Interestingly enough, I'm going to cite NASA. They have a land cover land use change program where they track from space what's going on with our land. 40 million acres of land in the United States is lawn. So that's 2% of the land area. And if you go by what's irrigated, that is the biggest irrigated crop area, if you want to call it that, for this purpose. It's not corn, it's not soybeans, it's lawns. According to the EPA, residential outdoor water use across the United States accounts for nearly 8 billion gallons of water every day. And this is primarily for ornamental lawns, the traditional lawn of the green expanse without any dandelions, without any clover. Now, the folks that I work with, and we're not alone, the University of Minnesota, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Blue Thumb, Lawns to Legumes, for, you know, 10, 15 years now, there's been a lot of people who have been transitioning away from this type of lawn and going to a more pollinator-friendly. The great thing about this issue is that you can just go down a street and pretty much see where people are at on the issue just by looking at their yard. And more people are making this transition. So this bill doesn't make anybody do anything. One example of a concern took place a couple years ago down in North Mankato when a retired university professor in biology, he and his wife tried to create a pollinator-friendly yard. Goldenrod, peonies, hostas, crabapple tree, pear and plum, and elderberries. And unfortunately, they were cited by the city because there were complaints from neighbors. So rather than going into all the details of that, I would just like to say that one of the reasons we're supporting this bill is that it takes that person out of the hot seat. So now you're having a conversation, and it's adversarial because there's a complaint, the city's enforcing the complaint, and it's going from there. So given all the benefits that the environment receives And here, in the interest of cities, keeping the water clean to begin with, I think, is in the long run a money saver for everybody. And water is a precious resource. We're the land of 10,000 lakes. But if you look at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture quality review, you can see that there's a lot of problems with our water, and a lot of it has to do with pesticides. These kind of lawns, they retain water in the soil with the long root plants, and there's less runoff, and there are fewer inputs. There's way less fertilizer. We do this at my house. We don't use any inputs. We don't use any fertilizer. We just use the leaves from the previous fall to get our nitrogen. So for those reasons, we're supporting House File 734. Thank you.
Mr. Cohen. Next, we have Craig Johnson. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, and please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And very much appreciate the committee taking the time to discuss this. As I'm sure most of you are aware from your own districts, this is a very popular issue for people to discuss right now. There are a lot of people who are interested in having native landscape on their properties. And our cities are hearing that and working with their residents to address that on a regular basis. More cities every year are coming up with ordinances that allow these types of development and landscaping in the types of properties they are prepared and able to staff to do that. So it might not be every type of parcel in the city. There might be zoning issues involved, but they are considering it, and more every year are adopting something. The League, of course, you may have heard in other committees, we have been supporting the Lawns to Legumes program. We've been supporting other programs to assist in pollination. We've been supporting EAB treatments that are non-neonicotinoid to prevent pollinator damage from those, which is another huge issue our cities are dealing with. But we feel that this bill goes too far in creating a mandate that all cities must allow natural landscaping on all parcels within their borders. And there's several reasons for that. First of all, this does apply to every one of Minnesota's 854 cities, regardless of size or location or what the residents are asking for in that community. We don't feel that that's an appropriate role for the state to take in doing this. There are local elected officials who are listening to what their communities are trying to do and can adjust for that. We also would point out that state law mandates that cities control noxious weeds, and the designated weed inspector for every city is the mayor. So unless they designate someone else or have staff they can designate, they are responsible under state law for finding and eradicating noxious weeds throughout their community. The reason that matters in this is because that will have communities with probably very few agriculturally trained staff, if any, having to decide whether a property is weeds and a nuisance or whether it is an appropriately managed natural landscape. And despite, and maybe even including because of, the definitions in this bill, those are fairly complicated decisions to make, and it would be a very difficult thing for a city to demonstrate just by a drive-by of a lot. We can't go on the property to inspect, so it would require us, a city staff person, to drive by, determine there was a nuisance weed, and then act on that. And that is that can be a difficult thing if you don't have the right staffing or ability to do that. And we do not receive funding from the state for noxious weed inspection unless a county chooses to pass some through. So last point, kind of alluded to it, but one size does not fit all. And this bill is a one size fits all bill. We have many cities that have no significant staff at all other than a city clerk and someone who mows and does some plowing. And that would be the people that would have to decide whether properties had a properly managed natural landscape or not, and whether it was being upkept properly. So we do support all of the things that this bill is trying to do. We think they're excellent. They do help our cities. They do help our environment. They do help create a wonderful environment in communities that want to have more of that type of landscaping. But we do ask that you leave that decision up to the local elected officials to decide what their communities are ready to handle. Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We have a question from Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
To the testifier from the league, I am in agreement with you that the use of shall versus may on this, several of us on this side of the aisle have had previous elected experience in municipal government. I know others have on that side as well. And this is a very broad-brushed approach to this. When you remove the ability of a locality to make that decision by themselves locally, you're really putting not only just a, you didn't use the word, but I will, unfunded mandate onto the cities that they will eventually have to levy for. But talk about what the impact of shall versus may is going to do for Minnesota cities.
I'm sorry, please go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. So shall versus may just means that if you have shall, all of these new definitions of categories of things would be permitted within cities or not permitted, because it also does talk about what turf grass lawn is in here. May would say that a city could choose to adopt all of these types of definitions and implement them on properties within their cities. Shall says that they must do that. I do think, to go along with what Representative Nash is leading into a little bit, that having some of these terms defined in statute could be very helpful for cities and also for determining what kinds of projects are best suited to things like lawns to legumes and other programs the state has. But the must is a concern.
Chair Hansen.
Just to get on this whole picture, you know, right now all of those cities that he mentioned have to do this right now in terms of looking at whether it's a managed English manor style turf grass or a pollinator lawn. So what's the difference? You've got your cities that are looking at a lawn, which has become the standard, codified, a lawn being an English manor manicured lawn. And what we're seeing is a revolution coming up from the grassroots, actually, of people wanting to do things differently. And you're having neighbors say, I don't want you to do that on your property. And calling the city, which would be government, to say, stop it. I mean, so I'll just have members look at line 1.15 through 1.18. The noxious weed law is not affected here. So if you've got thistles, you've got thistles.
Right.
If you've got... go back to the floor. If you've got cannabis sativa, you've got cannabis sativa. It's a noxious weed. So it's got to go. So those are requirements are already there.
Right. Representative. And
Madam Chair,
I'm so sorry.
I hadn't quite finished. I'll be brief, though.
All right. We have five members.
So I know, but I'll just wrap up. So, Madam Chair and members, as the former mayor of Waconia, what I know is that it's easy to drive by and figure out if something is an English manor-style lawn by city staff. It becomes far more cumbersome, costly, and time-consuming for them to drive by and say, well, thistle, 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 okay, this one's good, and they're playing eeny, meeny, miny, moe with things that are growing in someone's yard, and what is happening here in committee is now another removal of local control. So I just thought I'd put that out there on the record. I'll be voting no and would request a roll call on this bill.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Burke.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. So I think we all, in our own cities and just in travels, we see lawns that are maybe not aesthetically pleasing to our palates. It's a bit subjective to have, you know, 75 lawn ornaments that please the person that lives there, but maybe not the people that drive by, to the well-manicured lawn that we are sort of used to. And so actually playing off Representative Nash's comments, how are we to know if we're a mayor and we're driving by and we're looking at somebody's yard, whether the unkempt, so to speak, yard is actually full of weeds, or are there actually the native plants that are, you know, fostering the pollinators? And like if you go to the Landscape Arboretum, there's a whole section on Minnesota native plants, and it's fascinating and it's gorgeous and it's obviously something to aspire to. So what is the difference driving by and thinking that these are noxious weeds without knowing it versus driving by and seeing like it's actually a pollinator garden, and why is one sort of assumption about it easier to make than the other?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Berg, I'd have you look at line 1.12 through 1.14, manage natural landscapes. Do not include turf grass lawns left unattended for the purpose of returning to a natural state. So, you know, sometimes you have a lawn that may go wild, you're not around, and you can kind of tell that long length turf grass. Manage natural landscapes by the definition means planned, intentional, and maintained planting. And if we go back to the reference of what Mr. Cowan mentioned, here you had a retired biologist who had put in their lawn, and the city said, take it out.
I would just ask Mr. Johnson if you would go back and sit with the public, and we'll continue since your testimony is finished. Thank you.
Just as a follow-up, that actually was a question. Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. That question was actually more directed to the testifier and his remarks saying mayors are the only people that drive by and make determinations about the lawn. So I was saying sometimes an unkempt yard could look just that way. What's the determination process? Like, you just drive by and say, this is unkempt, or you drive by and say, you know, there could be all of the natural landscape plants in such a yard that we would want. How does the mayor, like, what's your determination process, and therefore what action or inaction to be taken per property owner?
And I would just like to remind the audience that Mr. Johnson is with the League of Minnesota Cities. If you'll please answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the shortest answer is that's going to vary by city, depending on what they have for staffing. But when you drive by a property, you have to determine just from a drive-by what you are seeing. So in the case of if it's a standard lawn or like mine, where I do not apply anything or water it, I just let all those wonderful dandelions and clover grow, but I keep it mowed and keep it trimmed. In that case, it's pretty easy to tell if there's some big plant growing up that's a noxious weed, or that I've let the grass get a foot and a half tall and I haven't mowed it. Those are defined in ordinance in the city as being a nuisance on the property, and then the city would have to go through the steps of having that determined to be a nuisance, which has some pretty specific legal requirements in statute, and then you would be able to force, you know, the property owner to deal with that. And the challenge that we were seeing with this is that we will now potentially have cities that were not ready to do that with managed landscapes, having someone claim that my backyard is a managed landscape. Well, we can't really go back there to look. We have to go from the property lines, and we may not know, is that a wild ginseng plant? Is that, what is it? You know, and it could be a noxious weed, and we don't necessarily know. And so it gets more challenging the more of these you have, unless you are staffed up and ready for that as a city, which many of our cities are. They're planning to allow these types of lawns, so they're ready for that. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and either to the author or if Mr. Johnson might, well, it may affect you. So on 1.7, you know, we're talking about statutory cities or home rule charter. How does this affect a township or a homeowners association that the homeowners have agreed, purchasing the property, agreed to live in that association and may have certain aesthetic values that they may not want a pollinator garden, or maybe they do? Does this bill affect townships? I'm guessing not, since it's not in here, and then why? But then also the homeowners associations, how would they be affected?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You are correct, Representative Kosnick. It does not affect townships. It is only the statutory city and home rule charter. Generally, and this is just anecdotally, the townships often have a county, there's a county weeds inspector, a township weed inspector. They're dealing with larger tract of often agricultural lands, so they have their own authorities there. And it's really the cities where we're seeing the evidence of ordinances going against
property on traditional lawns. So it does not affect the townships. It says owner, authorized agent, authorized occupant of any privately owned lands or premises. So you have, if you had a homeowners association, the authorized occupant would have to be the entity, which is not going to be just one member. It'd have to be a decision by the entity because they'd have to have the authorization for that person to make a decision, and that person is going to have to be representing the entity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
So it would be curious, if you think it's good for the cities, I don't know why you would, I'm glad you're not, but I don't know why you wouldn't include townships if it's that important. But then also with the homeowners associations, I think it does raise an issue of, you know, for instance, you know, traditionally you might think of a townhome development and, you know, you got 120 townhomes side by side and twin homes and this or that. But I would also say in other areas, there are homeowners associations that have acre properties, 2-acre properties. And in certain areas, they might want to do something, one homeowner, and but it's just established they don't. And I think this might cause problems with homeowners associations and people not recognizing the strength and power of their associations to have a uniformed aesthetics. And I think maybe we need a little bit more work with this bill because those issues need to be addressed. I remember my cousin moved in to my district. She's all excited. She came in from out of state, gets to vote for her cousin, get me a campaign sign, brought it over there. The next day, somebody came knocking on her door and says, we don't allow campaign signs in here, and it's a big property. So I think it needs a little bit more work to consider all the different types of property types and not just have our cities and towns included.
Thank you. Representative, do you want to answer?
Again, Madam Chair and Representative Kosnick, the authorized occupant, so the homeowners association would have to make the decision. It wouldn't be just one member. It'd have to be they are the entity.
It's a contractual agreement, right? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. You know, I'm one of those guys that actually did restore prairie on a bunch of my property, so I'm very sympathetic to you know, to what it is that you're trying to do and what we're trying to create. I would say that creating these little tracks here and there and everywhere doesn't really improve our biodiversity. I mean, we all know that defragmentation of the forest and of our natural systems have caused an enormous amount of damage, and trying to do these little bits here and there don't really do it. Being someone that actually has done this, these areas require to be burned. It's a massive amount of work that has to go into maintaining these things to keep them from just turning into a noxious weed pile. I was involved in the Solid Water Conservation District a number of years ago when we tried to create these rain gardens that would collect this sediment. They fill up immediately. The maintenance on them is incredibly difficult. But mandating a city to authorize this use, I think, does go too far. I hope your friend, who was the botanist who created this, worked with their city and is allowed to keep it. I have found in most of my dealings with cities that people that want to do things and push the envelope, be it chickens or additional animal units, most cities will find a way to ensure that those residents have the ability to modify their property in a way that actually works for them. It's very, very, very seldom is that heavy hand of a city that comes down and says, you know what, we're just not going to, you know, we're not going to do this. So for me, it's a little bit one size fits, you know, too big fits all. It does leave out especially urban townships, and there are urban townships that have higher densities, and which is great, but it also creates this patchwork. You know, we have 854 cities, we have 1,760 townships, and it does create a patchwork. And so this one does go too far. I really appreciate what it is. I mean, I live this life, but I think this one goes too far with shall. So I appreciate you bringing the bill, but I can't support it today.
Thank you very much. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to correct the record, I don't know the person in North Mankato.
All right.
Not a friend. I don't know. And then secondly, I can provide you with the peer-reviewed data from the University of Minnesota that small tracts of land and other that small tracts of land, particularly with pollinators, particularly with insects, do make a difference. It's not the big herbivores, not that. And on my own land, we use black plastic to kill off the turf, and the neighbors all wondered what was going on. Why do you have black plastic on your lawn? And then now they're like, wow. Now we see what happens. It does take time. That's why the bill talks about managed natural landscapes.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen. As a former county commissioner, it's hard to support any bills that say that you shall. It's really hard to manage it. And I'm all for the bees and the butterflies. I mean, to create an oasis, how wonderful to watch. But there are some unintended consequences depending upon how this looks. And so, and one of them is rodents. So if you have, it could look wonderful, but you're potentially increasing the possibility of rodent infestation in a city. I had a neighbor who did that, and she had woodchucks. And so I don't see anything here. What are the cities going to do or jurisdictions mandate rodent infestation?
Thank you, Representative Harder. It's a great question. Chair Anson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Harder, any requirements relating to pest control still exist. This doesn't void any of those. You have to have basic sanitation. I'll use, again, my house for an example. You know, you can have vegetation go right up to your house, or you can have that barrier. One thing that rodents do is they don't like to be out in the open. So what you're saying is when you've got the vegetation there, the rodents can be in that. But if you have basic sanitation, you have that line up to the house. If you're putting in, you don't have a place for those rodents to go. So it's the other, to use a different type of pest, it's why you have less geese where you have open grass next to on like golf courses. That's why geese go to golf courses. They can see the predators. So putting in the native vegetation, this doesn't override any requirements on rodent control or any other pest control. You still are able to deal with that.
Thank you. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Hansen. So it was suggested that this bill would interfere with the ability of mayors to fulfill their duties as weed inspectors. Part of the glamour of municipal law in Minnesota is that we for one thing, we have mayors serving as weed inspectors. I would have loved to see former Waconia Mayor Nash as the weed inspector of the city, where I don't know if he had a hat for that role or anything that he wore. But cities also have the authority to designate assistant weed inspectors. There's a whole chapter of Minnesota statutes, chapter 18, dealing with noxious weeds. This bill doesn't affect the ability of cities to designate assistant weed inspectors. I'm getting pretty far removed from my days on the Golden Valley City Council, but I do remember, just because it seemed so strange, that we would designate a city staff person as the assistant weed inspector, because by state law, the mayor was the main weed inspector. But line 1.17 of the bill specifies that meadow vegetation does not include noxious weeds. I mean, I just don't see this bill as interfering with cities' ability to tackle noxious weeds. If they have a problem doing so, that's an argument for tweaking the noxious weed statute or maybe providing a source of funding for cities to tackle the problem. But it's not a problem with this bill. This is a good bill. Many Minnesotans want to create native landscapes and do their part to help pollinators and reduce runoff. I don't always support proposals to limit local control, but this is a situation where there shouldn't be an artificial barrier in place preventing people from doing their part to help the environment because of aesthetic reasons that are frankly becoming obsolete. Thank you for calling a roll on this. I'll be glad to vote yes on it.
Right, and with that, we'll let you wrap up, Chair Hansen, and then we'll call the roll.
I ask for your support.
Thank you very much. Mr. O'Neill, if you would please take the roll.
Yes, Madam Chair. Chair Cleavorn.
Aye.
Chair Cleavorn, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nash, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen,
aye.
Representative Hansen, aye. Representative Harder,
no.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr,
aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy,
no.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick,
no.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau,
no.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton,
aye.
Representative Newton, aye. Madam Chair, the ayes are 8, the nays are 5.
Thank you. And with a vote of 8 ayes, 5 nays, the motion prevails. Excuse me. And House File 734 is recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Thank you.
That concludes our business for today. Our next meeting is Tuesday, February 21st. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.